time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
What I'm about to say should not be construed as medical advice. Before making any changes, you should consult with your doctor. This material is my opinion. Based in research and experience, it may or may not apply to you. You need to assess my statements. Do not accept what I say as fact. Research what I say. Hi, this is Lee Bockham, and you're with us on the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you thrive no matter what life throws your way. And right now, we're in the middle of the Dealing with Depression series, and this depression series is designed to help you learn how to cope and how to change your life based on the fact that you or a loved one may be dealing with these symptoms of depression. Now, we've already talked to several weeks prior. The first week, I talked about some truths and myths of depression. And I really wanted to challenge that whole idea that it's a chemical imbalance, that we really have no scientific proof of that. In fact, we have a lot of scientific proof that's against that. And I also wanted to challenge the whole assumption that the way to deal with depression is through medication. What I also tried to lay out there is why medication has not been proven to be successful. Now, just as a footnote of that, some people have contacted me and said, I found a medication that helps me. And to which I say, that's great. There is a certain percentage of people who are going to respond to medication. The problem is it's not as effective as the pharmaceutical industry has led us to believe and as a lot of doctors tend to think it is. And so it's become a first line of defense. And unfortunately, it's just not been productive for a lot of people. And so that's why I wanted to challenge that during that first one. In the second series, we talked about what depression is. And I tried to lay out some of the symptomology and what really we're talking about as a whole systemic issue when we're talking about depression. In the last episode, I talked about some other syndromes and issues, both medical and psychological, that can look like depression but aren't. And the reason I wanted to bring those out is because if you're trying to deal with depression and it's not depression, then you're not making headway. And so a lot of times people find that they keep trying to deal with their depression. It's not going away. Sometimes it's even getting worse. And the reality is they're not suffering from depression. They're suffering from something else that needs a different treatment. So if you listen to that and you're still listening, you probably have decided that either you or a loved one really does have depression, really suffers from depression, and you can kind of narrow it down to that. And so today I want to talk about how you can deal with depression, how you can move beyond depression. And this is not a, just buck up and think better thoughts. This is more about how you treat this as a systemic issue, how you address all of the pieces of this in one piece. Now, everything I'm going to talk about has research to back up the fact that it is effective. The more you put into play, the more likelihood you are going to see some results from this. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is really try to do this, really try to follow through on this. And the reason I say that is because one of the last things that people want to do when they feel depressed is to kind of get up and get going. And so a lot of times the depression itself defeats working on the depression. So I recognize that, and I know that from years of working with people where I would suggest something and they would know that it would be something that would be beneficial and yet can't quite get to it. In fact, one of the questions I've asked person after person is, what if you were to write your own prescription for dealing with your depression? And every time they have an answer. And sometimes they would even follow through, but a lot of times, even though they knew what they needed to do, they found it difficult to put that into play. So today I'm going to give you some suggestions that I hope that you have a chance of putting into place. Okay, let's divide this into two different sections. One is kind of the first aid, and the second is the long term. The first aid is what do you get the most bang for your buck with the shortest amount of time? These are the pieces that you put into place, and they are likely to give you the biggest benefit right off the bat, almost immediately. And so we want to start with those. And I actually have them in some ways clustered around what's most effective. So what's the number one thing I would suggest? And the number one thing I would suggest is exercise. Now, I'm not talking about deciding that you're going to run a marathon or deciding that you're going to go and be a bodybuilder. I'm just talking about getting the body moving. we have a lot of research now showing that part of what gets us into trouble is the sedentary lifestyle that gets us where we are. And so one of the things that exercise does is it begins to put the body back into a natural rhythm. Not only that, but it releases endorphins into the bloodstream that are naturally going to make you feel better. And so one of the most effective ways of combating depression is doing exercise. So let me define what I mean by exercise. The first thing I want to say is I don't mean going for long hours of runs. In fact, there is this understanding now that sometimes cardio work can become chronic and create chronic inflammation in your body and actually do a lot of problems to your body. So, you know, sometimes I've had people come in and they say, you know, I don't understand it. I'm running 30, 40 miles a week and I'm still feeling low energy and depression. And my response is, let's back off the mileage. Let's do some smaller stuff. Let's find out if maybe you're actually overdoing this part. So what do I suggest? Well, a minimum part would be a 15 to 20 minute walk. 15 to 20 minute walk once a day. That's what I'm talking about. 15 to 20 minute of walking. That's enough, especially if you're doing it outside. You get a couple of things going at one time. And so if you're at a temperate place, or you can keep yourself warm, to get out and walk 15 to 20 minutes. If you can't get out and do it, then going to a mall or somewhere else, even a treadmill will do it. But 15 to 20 minutes of exercise, of just walking. And I'm not talking about a slow walk, a moderate walk. You don't have to run. You don't have to speed walk, but getting a moderate walk in. Now, if you're already doing some walking and you're still finding the symptoms there, I suggest you add a little bit more exercise. And again, this is resistance work a lot of times, or calisthenics. And I would even recommend a protocol that's going to help you get started. And it's the 7-minute workout. Now, the 7-minute workout is named that for one simple reason. It takes 7 minutes. But in those 7 minutes, you're doing high intensity interval training, which is kind of the hot buzzword in our understanding of exercise and how we get into shape. It's shown itself to be very effective in both burning fat and getting the body going and getting in shape. So 7 minutes. Now, 7-minute workout is not something you would do every day, but 3, 4, no more than 5 times a week. And one option is to alternate between the walking and the 7-minute workout every other day. So you can get a good workout in less than 15 minutes. Now, a 7-minute workout is intended for you to kind of do it at a pretty high intensity. But the nice thing about it is it's all body weight exercises. You don't have to have any extra equipment other than a chair. That's all you'll need for it. And it gets your heart moving in great ways, gets your body activated. It gets all the muscles in your body going. And so you get kind of an overall benefit from that. So that's the 7-minute workout. It's been scientifically proven, and exercise has been scientifically proven to help alleviate depression better than any medication that we have. The statistics are much higher on just that one piece. So 20-minute walk once a day if you want to alternate in a 7-minute workout, and you can find the 7-minute workout on the internet. It'll tell you how to do it. You can also find apps for both Android and iOS and probably lots of other things out there. So look for the 7-minute workout and give it that a try. Okay, so the first thing, exercise. The second thing is to connect. One of the things that happens when we're depressed is we tend to isolate. And then it begins to be kind of a pattern that builds on itself, a spiral downward. As we are more isolated, we feel more depressed. The more depressed we feel, the less we want to connect, and on it goes. And so my suggestion is that you fight that. You decide that even if you don't feel like being with other people, you're going to choose to be with other people. You're going to find a way of being with them. So consider some group activity, whether it's associated with work or work friends or outside of work or even with church or other places of worship, and find a way of just being connected with some people around you that you don't have to tell them your whole life story. You don't even have to tell them that you're depressed, that you just are going to be around people. We humans are social creatures, and we are built for having that connection. So when we are feeling down, sometimes it's also an indicator that we've begun to isolate and we've cut off that social connection that's so important to humans. So look for that connection. If it's close friends, that's great. If you don't feel like you have a lot of close friends, maybe finding an affinity group. If you like to hike, you know, finding a hiking group, or if you like to talk philosophy, finding a philosophy group, or if you want to do Bible study, to find a Bible study or any other sacred scripture group to really get into not just that content, but to be in connection with other people. So the second thing is to find some place to connect with other people. Okay, so the third one is sleep maintenance. And this is very important because one of the symptoms of depression is sleeping too much or too little. And sleep maintenance is deciding that you're going to live within the bounds of appropriate sleep. You see, if you don't have enough sleep, you can create more and more symptoms of depression. And if you have too much sleep, you also can create some symptoms of depression. And so what we're looking for is the optimal range for you between 7 and 9 hours. If you're getting less than 7 hours, you're likely to be kind of pulling out of the reserves from the body, and it's going to make you feel more depressed. You're going to start wearing out your body and burning it out. If you're sleeping more than 9 hours, your body kind of goes into an hibernation phase, and so you can also feel more depressed by that. So deciding that you're only going to sleep 7 to 9 hours. Now, I recognize that sometimes people have insomnia and you have to work on it. So one of my suggestions, if you have a hard time falling asleep, is to use melatonin. Melatonin is a natural substance that your body creates, but if it's not making enough, a melatonin supplement can help you with that. It's very easy to use and very safe. And the melatonin is much safer than the sleep pills we have. Because one of the things we know from the sleep medications is it actually disrupts our sleep pattern some. And so we end up paying the price down the road. So instead of a sleep medicine, to use melatonin. The other thing is to avoid alcohol as a way of going to sleep, because it also disrupts your brain waves and your natural pattern of sleeping. So if you're going to bed and have just had alcohol, it actually is also disrupting your sleep. And to make sure you're not sleeping too much, to go ahead and get up when the alarm goes off after you set it for that amount of time, and make sure that you're attending to that, because when you are finding yourself stuck in too little sleep or too much sleep, what you're going to find is that it actually exacerbates those symptoms of depression, and then you start down that same depression spiral. Okay, so the third suggestion is sleep maintenance. The fourth one is to take vitamin D and fish oil. Now, vitamin D and fish oil tend to be two supplements that we are too low on around. And a lot of times, especially in the winter, we don't get much vitamin D. Vitamin D is what your body does when it's in sunlight. It converts the sunlight into vitamin D. And so a lot of times we find that people are low on vitamin D, and that's part of what's dragging them down. And to use a supplement, especially during the fall, winter, spring, when you're not getting enough light, and for most people who are, just not near the equator, it's probably a necessary thing to take. I take it every day, all the way through the year. I just add more of it in when the sunlight is a little less and I can't be out as much. Fish oils are important because they give us some stuff that we don't get anywhere else, and especially the omega-3s and DHAs that just aren't usually in our diet. In fact, we have often a mismatch of the omega oils in our system. And so the omega-3s that are so important in that fish oil helps to counteract. In fact, it has an anti-inflammatory element to it. And so there's a lot of research that's showing that fish oil is good overall for you, and it's especially good for an inflamed system and can help in relieving some of the symptoms of depression. So that's why I always recommend both vitamin D and fish oil. If your body doesn't need it, it's not going to do any harm. But if it does need it, it suddenly begins to put things back into balance. Okay, so number four is vitamin D and fish oil as two supplements that are useful. Number five is healthy eating. And I know there's a lot of controversy over the healthy eating, so I'm going to give you my opinion. My opinion is that one of the best ways of eating for depression is to eat low carb and to eat high healthy fat. And then the balance is just in lean protein. And what I mean by high healthy fat is to get your fat content from good sources. The good sources that I would recommend are coconut oil or olive oil and things like avocados and other vegetables that are high in oil content. Those are the places to get it. In fact, I don't cook with anything other than coconut oil. And by the way, coconut oil doesn't have to taste like coconut, but I use that for coconut oil for cooking, or I use olive oil. Those two are the better ones. The others tend to have the wrong numbers of those omega complexes in them. And so it can, again, create inflammation in the body. And that's what we're trying to get away from. So getting low carb, that means low amounts of sugar. And what I would suggest is certainly getting away from soft drinks and other places. It's basically delivering pure sugar to your system and getting to a high healthy fat and lean protein as the bulk of your calories. Now, the reason this is important is because we're trying to create low inflammation in the body. There's a lot of research now showing that there is an inflammation component to a lot of cases of depression. And so we're trying to get to a lower level of inflammation in the system. That just means that your body is inflamed because it's reacting to something. And one of the things that the body reacts to is a lot of sugar content, a lot of processed foods. And so when we're looking for the low inflammation, staying away from processed foods, trying to stay at whole foods. So if it's something that would occur in nature, you know, that kind of form is better than if it's highly processed. You don't find a lot of the processed foods that we eat. You know, there's no Pop-Tarts in nature, but there are bananas and fruits and vegetables and whole foods. I'm not saying raw. I'm just saying that if you can't see it as a whole food, then you can guess that there's a lot of processing behind it that probably leads to a lot of inflammation. So we're just trying to drop the level of inflammation and also looking for the different parts of your diet that might be causing inflammation. I've said before that one of the things that I've committed to is gluten-free, and I'll tell you how that came about because part of it touches on kind of my feelings of well-being. A number of years ago, I was deciding that I needed to lose weight. I'd been seriously ill. I was recovering from that, realizing that my body had been neglected, and so I decided to try to eat healthier. And so the first thing I tried was Tim Ferriss's slow-carb diet. I had to moderate that a little bit because I didn't like the days where I could eat anything I wanted to. I felt horrible those days, and I couldn't figure out why. And later on, I figured out why. But when I was first on his diet, if you're familiar with his diet, then one of the things that he talks about is getting rid of all the whites in your diet. So that means potatoes and bread and rice and sugar and flour and anything that would appear white as you're using it would be out of your diet. Well, one of the things that got rid of for me was bread, and one of the things that got rid of was gluten. And a while later, when I was kind of adding some things back to my diet, one of the things I realized was gluten was an inflammatory for me. Not only that, but it made me feel awful. Now, I know there's a lot of controversy about gluten-free, and I can only tell you from my own experience that whenever I have gluten, my stomach hurts like it used to, and I start having a much more depressed feeling around me. And so whether people agree with that, my suggestion is if you suffer from depression, you try it. To give up gluten for a month to 2 months, most people say that it takes about a two-month period for your body to reset after you stop using gluten. But what that means is you get rid of the bread products. You get rid of anything that would be made from wheat, from flour. And so no pasta, no breads, those kinds of things. Just give them up for a couple of months. If after a couple of months you can't tell any difference in your gut or in your mood, then that probably is not the contributing factor. But if it is, it's crucial to find that out. And what have you given up 2 months? Now, one of the things that I caution against is then reverting to kind of a gluten-free product diet where you go with gluten-free pastas and gluten-free breads, because what that does is it increases the sugar load in your system. Those are very high sugar content things. And suddenly you're dealing again with the inflammatory effect of high sugar. So for me, healthy eating is about being low carb, meaning I'm not getting a lot of sugars in my system. And I'm also looking for a high healthy fats. And again, that's coconut oil and olive oil for the most part. Also eat a lot of avocados. And I also then go with lean proteins. And lean protein you can do either on a vegetarian diet or an omnivore diet. So just looking for those good sources of protein. That leads to a low inflammation kind of diet with low processed foods and low sugar. Okay, number six is a routine, to stick to a routine. One of the things that often happens when people have those symptoms of depression is they get out of their routine. They stop going places, they stop going to stores, they stop doing activities they enjoy, they stop following their natural routine, and then it begins to be that spiral again. So deciding that you're going to go with the routine that you've had in the past, even if you don't feel like it, even if it means dragging yourself somewhere and staying with a routine, it is important to create a routine and stay with it. Okay, so number six, routine. Okay, number seven is having a mood diary and a gratitude diary. And what you record in the mood diary is not how bad you're feeling, but when you feel good. Notice the times that you feel good and write about that, because sometimes we forget that. When we're feeling depressed, we just forget that maybe 15, 20 minutes before, we felt pretty good about things. We felt good and positive. And now let's talk about that gratitude diary. A gratitude diary for me is one of those very crucial tools. And here's the thing. Gratitude is a great way of shifting your brain, shifting your thinking away from the depressive kind of thoughts that plague a depressed person. And so gratitude is a way of rebuilding the brain. And it's very easy to do. My suggestion is that you set aside just a few minutes in the morning or at night to write down three things for which you're grateful. Just three things. Now, they have to be something new each day, but three things. And you can do it one of two ways. First thing in the morning, you can write down the three things that you're grateful for. And then the evening, you look back over those and think about those. Or you do the reverse. You write the three things that you were grateful for that day in the evening, and then in the morning, you reflect on that. You look at them. Either way, depending on how you like to operate your day, what kind of routine you get into, you can do a gratitude journal on each side. But what you want to be doing is writing three things down for which you're thankful, and then reviewing them. The importance of this is that you begin to look for those things. You begin to look for the places where there is good stuff going on. And you begin to look for the places where you're thankful. A typical place where the depressive symptoms get you is that you're always looking for what's going wrong and what's wrong with your life and how things are not working out, rather than what's going right and what works out and what is going in your favor. And so the gratitude journal gives you a way, a kind of a frame for looking at that. It puts on the gratitude goggles, because after you've done a few days of this, you're going to have to start looking for the things. You know, it's easy the first few days. You can talk about your kids and your spouse, and hopefully those are things to be grateful for, and the things that have come into your life, and hopefully you can kind of quickly name those things, but then it begins to be a little more difficult because you're coming up with three different things each day. So then you start looking for, what are you going to write about? What are you going to write about tonight or tomorrow morning that you're grateful for? And that begins to frame your brain in different ways. What we know from neuroplasticity, meaning the study of how the brain keeps changing and adapting, is that when we work on things to be grateful for, the brain rewires itself. The brain actually rewires and begins to look for those things. It has a different outlook, a different frame. And so the research shows that when people do gratitude journals for a month to 2 months, it has lasting effects for 6 to 9 months. And so you get a lot of bang for your buck just by recording three things for which you're grateful, morning or evening. And then either the evening or morning, you reflect on those things that you've already written down as a way of keeping on track. Okay, so that's the first aid. The first aid is exercise, connect with other people, do some sleep maintenance, take your vitamin D and fish oil, do healthy eating, then get to a routine, and do your mood diary, your gratitude diary. Those are the kind of the same things. So what do you do long term? Because those are the ones that give you the most bang for your buck. Well, there is a type of therapy that has been proven to be very helpful in dealing with depressive symptoms. And that the place that's been very helpful is called CBT, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. CBT has been proven to be as effective as any medication and much more effective than other types of psychotherapy. Sometimes we get into psychotherapy and some types of therapy get you to reflect a lot on things and you get kind of stuck in this frame of what's happened to you, what's wrong with you. Cognitive behavioral therapy looks at how you're thinking about things and helps you shift it, because the cognitive behavioral therapy approach assumes that there are some certain ways that all of us twist our thinking. And when we twist our thinking, it's going to end up in a downward spiral. So when we begin to right the thinking, when we begin to find better, healthier ways of looking at things and making sure that we're thinking about them in logical, fair ways, then our brain begins again to rewire around those pieces. And so part of the power of cognitive behavioral therapy is helping you think differently. It's very easy to look and find a therapist or ask a therapist, are you trained in CBT? That's the letter CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. It's been proven to be very effective. The other element that I would put in there is meditation and mindfulness. Both meditation and mindfulness are ways that you create an awareness of the thoughts that are going through your head, but not only that, of understanding that they are just thoughts, that whenever we're having a thought, it's actually removing us from the reality around us, and we're thinking about it. A lot of times we confuse our thoughts with reality. And so when we start confusing our thoughts with reality, we get caught up in thinking about that. That's one of the things that I've talked about in Thriveology a number of times, is the fact that our thoughts can fool us into thinking they're reality. And the more the depression kind of grabs us, the more likely we are to lapse into that place where we don't recognize that a thought is just that. It's just a thought. We get wrapped up in believing that that thought is reality. And so we have to pull ourselves back, and the mindfulness practices and meditation, and there's so much out there now on mindfulness and meditation. You can look at the Relaxation Response, that's a book, Relaxation Response, and a number of others that are out there about mindfulness and about meditation, and teach yourself to do that, because part of meditation is attending to the fact that as you're sitting quietly watching your breath or doing some other mental activity, that a thought will come in and try to disrupt you, try to steal your attention. That's what our thoughts do. They try to steal our attention. And then we kind of entertain them. We entertain that thought and get lost in it and wrapped up in it and begin to have what I call a thought attack. And that thought attack just gains and gains on us unless we're able to step back and say, whoa, wait, that's just a thought. A thought is just a thought. And that's what mindfulness is about, being aware of the present moment, being aware of what's going on around you rather than the thoughts that are clouding that for you. So meditation and mindfulness are another long-term approach. It takes a while to kind of learn that lesson about thoughts and to get into the mindfulness and meditation frame. But once you're there, you get great benefits. Okay, so I've already talked about that inflammation diet, but also a long-term thing is to be trying to limit the inflammation in your body. And the reason I put this not only in first aid, but in long-term is because it takes some time for the inflammation to go away in your body. Just because you ate well one day doesn't mean the inflammation that's in your body goes away. Whenever we have an inflammation response, it can last for a while, for weeks or even months. And so part of what we're trying to undo is the long-term effects. The other is to continue the first aid. You know, a lot of times what happens is people start feeling better and they stop the first aid. And yet the first aid is not just first aid, but it's continuing aid. There's nothing in the first aid sequence that I told you that is necessarily important just to do while you're depressed. We ought to be exercising and moving our body and helping our body be healthy. We ought to be connecting with other people, making sure we're getting the sleep, making sure that our body is getting the right nutrients, staying in routines, and watching for gratitude. All of those pieces are still important, even if we have begun to feel better. So, once again, the long-term strategy for dealing with depression after you've done that first aid is cognitive behavioral therapy can give you a lot of understanding of how those thoughts get twisted. So can meditation or mindfulness practices. One or the other or both are great ways of getting a grasp on how psychologically our mind leads us further and further into that depression trap. And then dealing with inflammation is just a matter of taking some time, making sure we're attending to our body in healthy ways so that the inflammation, the fire in the body that is so tied in to so many other illnesses. I mean, we have inflammation ties to cancer, to diabetes and Alzheimer's and lots of other processes. So while you're tamping down the inflammation in your body because of the depression, you're also helping your body avoid other chronic illnesses and chronic problems along with that. So it's very important to kind of attend to that inflammation piece. And then just to continuing in that first aid process. Okay, so that's my frame. It's a very simple frame. There's not a lot that's going to take a lot of time, but what it does take is an effort, a decision to that you're not going to be stuck into depression, a decision, just decide this is not going to be your life or the life of a loved one. And if it's a loved one, to walk generously with them, to walk gently beside them as they try to put these into practice, because you might get a little frustrated that somebody is not able to follow this very easily. That's part of the depression symptoms. You may be frustrated with yourself that you're not able to follow the protocol, but recognize that also is part of the depressive symptoms. And the question is, can you talk back to the depression? Can you decide that you're not going to fall prey to the depression trap, that you're not going to fall into that hole, and you're going to continue to work to get yourself out of it? What you'll find is this is effective when you decide this is where you're headed. You're no longer going to be in that trap. You're no longer going to be in that hole. You're going to move forward with that. Okay, I hope that's been helpful. If it has been, I would love it for you to share this. Let people know how to find this. It's easy to do on Twitter. You can just type into your browser, thriveology.com/love. That's how to show us Twitter love, thriveology.com/love, and that's thriveology.com/love. That gives you a pre-populated tweet. You just hit send, and it sends people to that site, to Thriveology, so they can learn about how to beat their depression. You can also share this on Facebook right below. If you're on Thriveology.com, right below this post, there are ways of saving it, of sharing it on Facebook, on Google+, another Twitter place. You can pin it. You can find lots of ways of sharing it. But please share so others can find ways that they can naturally and effectively fight their depression. Also, if this has been helpful and you would like to support the vision of thriving in the world, I have a way for you to support the Thriveology podcast. You'll notice that there is, if you're on the blog, a little block right beside, just to the right of the post, that says Support Thriveology. If you'll click that, that'll take you to my Patreon page where you can pledge a certain amount per podcast. Now, this is kind of like a national public radio. I'm going to be here. I'm going to do all I can to keep this going. If this is important to you and you find it would be useful for others, you can be a part of that. You can put some skin in the game. You can join me in the process by supporting that. And that's a very helpful thing for me to be able to keep this up. There's no money attached to Thriveology for me. All I'm doing is trying to provide resources so you can thrive. So if that's something that's important to you to provide for others, please think about and consider helping us by supporting me with the Patreon campaign. If you're not on the website, if you're listening by iTunes or Stitcher or any other place, you can simply get there by typing in thriveology.com/support. That's thriveology.com/support, and that'll take you right to Patreon where you can pledge per episode and just show the ways that you want this good stuff to be in the world instead of all the negative news that's out there. Let's provide a way of helping people to thrive in the world. This is Lee Balcom wishing you a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at thriveology.com or at thriveologymagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled Thriveology. It's your life, time to live it.